Good morning, diners and travelers and those listeners with royal aspirations.
Oh, yes.
We're winding up our little tour of Ireland in a bang-up fashion with three castles. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, there you go. That sounds like the name of a public house in England. The interesting thing is almost all the castles in England were destroyed by Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Along with all the monasteries. The castles in Ireland survived, but they only really survived because they weren't built until after that.
Oh, really?
So the majority of them, although they pretend to be a little older, were actually built in the 17th, 18th, or 19th century.
Well, this trio, they're splendid.
They're really gorgeous
and
structures.
And they all have these Waterford crystal chandeliers hanging everywhere.
And we should also say, by the way, that they're just not great by Ireland standards. These are properties which are ranked by Condé Nast and people like that among the top properties of their type anywhere in the world. So there's some pretty special places, and you couldn't build one these days.
Well, good grief, no.
You actually couldn't. Even the ones that had some extensions done in the 1940s and 1950s had it done by craftsmen who really knew how to build in stone. The way that it had always been done, and I think that's a skill that's been lost across the world.
And the grounds are spectacular
in every case. Absolutely beautiful. So we're taking them in alphabetical order.
What else
are you supposed to do? I mean, it would be invidious to put somebody first and somebody last unless we were doing it in that order.
So the first stop would be Ashford Castle.
And then B for Ballinahinch Castle.
And then we go to Skipsey.
And then Skipsey and then D for Dromoland Castle. So first up then at Ashford Castle, we caught up with Paula, who's the director of marketing on site.
Very, very efficient.
Very, very efficient lady.
Yes.
And then it took us a couple of weeks afterwards, but we managed to catch up with the man who runs the wine program, which is one of the great features of the property. So we're going to put them back to back for you. So sit back and relax and enjoy what it might be like to stay at Ashford Castle.
After a really marvelous lunch in a dream environment called Ashford Castle, we are going to be talking to the director of marketing and also the chef de cuisine, is it, Adrian?
Executive
sous chef. Paula Carroll is in charge of this massive project of marketing this grand establishment. This place is absolutely overwhelming. I don't know how you can deal with it. It's so absolutely so special.
Well, thank you very much indeed, and it's a pleasure to have both you and Peter with us. I don't think it's quite as overwhelming as you possibly are thinking at the moment. Ashford is an icon. Ashford is actually something. We are fortunate to be the custodians of this extraordinary property, and one that I think inevitably I'm very proud of and have for a number of years. And I think I probably have the most enviable position in the country, if not in Europe.
What are we looking out at? This water.
You're looking out on the second largest lake in Ireland, Loch Corrib. And it is famous because, allegedly, there are 365 islands on Loch Corrib.
Is that true?
One for every day of the year. Well, I haven't personally counted them, but I know I've counted about 200. That's where I stopped.
They're uninhabited.
No, in fact, the last one was inhabited up to about 5 years ago, but there's one for sale. So if there's anybody out in your listenership that wants to buy their own private island on Loch Corrib, and they can take their little boat over to us here in Ashford to have lunch, why not?
Why not? I'm up for that. Have I talked to you about that, Peter? Tell us a little bit about how this started, this whole castle estate.
This started back in 1228, so a couple of years before all of us were here. And it started as a De Burgo castle. And, of course, in those days, one's enemies did not necessarily arrive by car or, indeed, by flying in. So it was very strategically located between a river and a lake so that people could actually see the onslaught of the enemies coming at any given time. So a lot of the outlook towers, which you can see from the property, are in fact where they would be stationed to ensure that nobody was coming that they didn't want. There's very little then known between then and the Bingham era. And the Bingham era was the 1500s. And that was the point when the president of Connaught, Lord Bingham, opened Ashford as his main home. And then moving on to the 1700s, it became an Oranmore and Brown family, and then a Guinness family, but the Oranmore Brown were related to the Guinnesses. So essentially you could say that the Guinnesses have been responsible for the development of what we have today as the Ashford Estate back since around the 1700s. And they, in fact, only gave up in 1921. And then, of course, Ashford became a hotel in 1939. So apart from the fact that we are the oldest, one of the oldest castles in Ireland, dating back to 1228, we are, in fact, the oldest castle hotel because we opened first in 1939.
Now, how much mutation has taken place on this property?
Absolutely, virtually none.
And that's amazing.
Well, to be honest about it, Anne, the only thing that has happened is that there was a wonderful American Irish gentleman called John A. Mulcahy. And when John A. Mulcahy bought over Ashford, it was very much to do with the fact that his ancestors were from here and he wanted to give back something to Ireland. When he bought over Ashford in the late 1960s/70s, he actually developed a wing and gave us what we have as additional bedrooms. But the integrity of the property and the part of the property that we are sitting in now has not changed since the days of the Guinness family ownership. So all of this wonderful wood paneling, the Irish oak, yeah, this is actually exactly the way it was in the Guinness family days.
It is stunning.
Well, thank you.
It's filled, of course, with antiques.
Thank you very much.
Quality and loaded with fireplaces, cozy places. You have all kinds of related activities. Skeet shooting, is there a clay pigeon?
Within the grounds, we have 350 acres of a private estate. And within those grounds, and this is the thing that because we are a total resort, and that's what we actually market ourselves as, a total resort. And within that, we have our own private golf course, albeit 9 holes, but very challenging, and complementary to our residence, which is terribly important, particularly for our North American guests. We have our own skeet shooting. We actually stable our own horses. And, of course, we opened Ireland's first school of falconry.
I wanted to touch on that. I just think that's extraordinary.
Well, it is because it's a sport that dates back to medieval times. And we opened the first school, but like everything else that we do in Ashford, there tends to be followers. And there are quite a number of schools. All of our total guests, I would say probably 50% of them partake in falconry. Yes, absolutely.
And I would think nearly all the staff at this stage has also
partaken. And all the staff.
It is a fantastic
thing to do.
Yeah. It is once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
So you can come here and essentially fill how long a period of time?
The minimum that you should allow to stay at Ashford is 2 days because you need two at least. But you know, quite a lot of our clients in America have now started to take staying for 7 to 21 days. So they base here and they go visiting the west of Ireland from here. And that actually has become very popular in the last 5 years. That's a trend I've noticed more and more, that Americans are wanting to base programs or base holidays as opposed to packing up every 2 nights and going off somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
I know. I mean, we've done that this trip, but I prefer your model. Now, of course, we're here also because of the cuisine, and you have a number of different dining options, Adrian. What might they be?
We have a couple of dining options. We have the drawing room, where you enjoyed your lunch today. We have the George V dining room, which is our 2AA Rosette award-winning fine dining establishment. We also have Cullen's at the Cottage, which opens seasonally between May and September. It is closed at the moment, but what we do is we take the operation over the bridge and back into the castle, and we serve the same style of food downstairs in the dungeon bar.
Oh, yeah. I read something. What about this dungeon bar? I read something about it.
The dungeon bar is would have been in the summertime is where we have the entertainment, I believe.
Okay.
And in the wintertime, we serve Cullen's at the dungeon.
So we don't like to inconvenience our clients to expect them to walk out over the grounds, particularly given the fact that it might be, I mean, this is Ireland, so it just might be a little chilly. So that's how we move the Cullen's option into the dungeon bar.
And Cullen's would be the casual dining option, so more family oriented, where you can go, you can get anywhere from a burger all the way up to a fillet steak to a lobster. It's just a little bit more casual, a little bit more family friendly.
Let's make sure people understand. When you're talking about fine dining, the George V dining room is a very fine dining room.
It is, by my count, I think it is one of the finest dining rooms in the country, if not Europe. It is the most beautiful dining room.
I would go along with that. I made a point of photographing it. How many people sit there?
At any one time, we can sit about 150 people at one time. Wow. For a large group. Now, obviously, the kitchen would much prefer if more than 12 to 20 people come in at every half-hour intervals. That way, every customer and can get the proper treatment. We're not feeling rushed. We're not feeling like we're rushed. That everybody can enjoy the fine dining and the fine cooking elements of the meal.
But there's lots of room for everybody. And if you get here early or you reserve correctly, you can get a seat.
Oh, looking, absolutely.
Looking out over the lake in a really quite delightful environment.
To be honest, Peter, our first and only priority are to our guests. So basically, any of our guests who are here who wish to make a reservation will always be catered for.
Oh, no. My issue was certainly that there are only a certain number of seats that sit right in the window looking out.
Oh, right. Okay. So, well, so, you know what? It doesn't make any difference where you're sitting, because you can enjoy that wonderful 11 Waterford Crystal chandeliered restaurant.
I thought 9, 11 of them.
and guys, one of the reasons we can't have dinner here tonight is because Peter didn't pack a tie.
Well, that's not strictly true. We could have given you one, Peter, because
I figured that.
We actually have ties available for our guests. In fact, for any of the Americans, particularly our American clients, they do sometimes tend not to want to bring jackets and shirts and ties with them. So we have a selection of different styles and different sizes of jackets and ties.
That would be fun. Let's talk a little bit more about the food. Adrian, what would you say is the general philosophy of food here, or style of food here? You could take it from either point of view.
Obviously, Chef Matt isn't here himself, but I think...
Oh, say who the...
Chef Stefan Matt would be the executive head chef at Ashford Castle, and has been for the past 8 years.
And he is a very high profile in Europe.
A former Michelin star winner and a very... very strong leader to learn from. And his philosophy, and now obviously mine and the castle's, would be that what we would do is we would use the best of local ingredients. That doesn't mean we use every local ingredient, it is the best. So obviously we're only about half an hour away from the ocean, so our emphasis on the best seafood and shellfish available, which I believe you sampled today.
Yeah, and where are these oysters I had that were so wonderful?
Those oysters are actually, they're a Pacific style oyster. They would a native Galway oyster, because the Galway oyster is only available 2 times a year in September and May. However, we have had fishermen that have developed oyster beds using specific style oysters in Galway Bay that can be produced.
So they're farmed, but they're still...
Well, they'd be wild, but they would be, the beds would be put down. They wouldn't be farmed, but they would certainly be...
Certainly, but that's why they were so familiar to us. And
they were
quite excellent.
I believe the Latin is it's a gigas oyster, G-I-G-A-S. Okay. So that would be the oysters you had today. We have on the menu at all times, we have obviously the finest beef and lamb in the world, Irish beef and lamb. We have at the moment now for winter, we have some more game, we have quail, we have our venison, we have some rabbit on the menus, and that would be in the George V dining room.
Now, where are you from?
I am from County Clare, which is about two... technically, we're in Galway at the moment because we're across the bridge. So we're one county down from Galway is County Clare, which has...
Adrian, the actual Mayo people now might get a little bit upset about that, darling. So just to clarify, Ashford Castle is in County Mayo.
Yes.
The section we're in at the moment is in County Galway. And Adrian is the next county down, right, which is Clare.
And my mother is from Galway, so she'd like me to mention that.
Oh, okay. All right.
So when you work at the castle during the summer, if you're in Cullens, you work in Mayo. If you work in the castle, you work in Galway. So the best of
That's wonderful.
Only in Ireland, Alan Peter, only in Ireland.
Absolutely.
Now, we're going to actually have further discussion at another time with the wine program director or sommelier, one of the sommeliers. You have three, I understand.
We do indeed. I mean, the wine program at the castle is extensive. We have regular wine dinners where the producers of wines from France, South Africa, and New Zealand come to the castle with some of their vintages, and we pair a 5-7 course tasting menu to the wines that they bring over, starting from the white wines all the way to the dessert wines and fortified. And the meals are often served, always served, in the Connaught Room, which is behind us with another beautiful chandelier.
Now the rascal sommelier is off sampling vintage somewhere right now, making sure that he's bringing back all the things for the future. So we'll catch up with him. If we don't catch up with him by the time this interview has, we'll catch up with him another time to make sure you have a chance to hear from him in person.
We have a website.
Yes, of course we do. Our website. In fact, it's very fortunate that you should be with us here today, because we are in the midst of a celebratory type of feeling in the castle, having just won the third best resort in Europe by Condé Nast Traveler.
That's
readers.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's and we're wonderful. The only Irish hotel that's voted in the number one top 100 hotels in the world. So that's something we're very, very proud of, Anne. So,
Anna I Peter, imagine you should be.
Well, we are. And I'm to be honest, yes, our website, of course, is very simple. It's just www.ashford.ie. And for anybody who goes to our website, please, please click on the Characters of Ashford video. There are four videos up there, one on the activities of Ashford, one on the interiors of Ashford, one on the facilities of Ashford, but the one that's most enjoyable is, of course, the Characters of Ashford, and believe you me, there are many.
There are plenty. now, of course.
Paula, you'd be one of
them. No, I was just going to say.
I'm actually not featured there myself, but I have been, yes, I suppose I should be, Peter.
Well, this has been absolutely delightful. I thank you, Adrian. I thank you, Paula. And I look forward to talking further with other people who are far afield at the moment who know more or have additional information about the
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you very much for having us. Yes, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
I'm guessing that Robert Bow is a happy man because he's been in his position as head of the wine program at Islands Ashford Castle for 20 years and spent that 20 years happily building a wine cellar. Am I right?
Yes, I've worked here since 1986, but I've been in charge of the wine program for the last 20 years. It's been a labor of love.
I'm sure it has. What a wonderful thing to do with your time.
Yes, and in that 20 years, we've experienced the Celtic Tiger. We've experienced so many different things that have all helped the wine list grow to where it is today.
Now, you know? before we go very much further, though, we have to tell the story of the wine geese. Because, as we discussed before you came on the air, Irish wine is not terribly successful, probably in the same category as English wine, and Anne would be quick to point out.
English wine at the moment, especially their sparkling wine, has become very successful.
Right. Yeah. Anne doesn't care for it. She prefers her champagne to be French.
Well, the French people are growing it, but this year, apparently, the weather was so bad that the whole wine harvest got wiped out in England, right?
Yeah, well, that's the problem in Ireland. We just don't have the weather to do it.
Yeah.
Follies around, but it just doesn't it just doesn't suit. Now, in years to come, in another 100 years, we might have the perfect climate for growing wine, but at the moment, we don't.
Yeah, never say no, huh?
Well, now, there's a backstory, wine list at Ashford Castle and Irishman's association with wine, which is not commonly known about since Irish are more associated with Guinness Stout and Jameson and Bushmills whiskey. But you're saying there's some history behind this, and people who really influenced the world in winemaking, many of them came from Ireland, and they're called the wine geese. But do tell us the story.
Well, the term, the original wine geese, came from Ireland, where the gentry, the rich people of Ireland, had to leave in the 1720s, and it was called the Flight of the Earls, where they literally all had to leave, take their belongings with them, leave their houses and their land behind, and take their fortune with them. Most of them ended up in France, in Bordeaux, and at one time in Bordeaux, there were 50 chateaux named after Irish ancestral name. Some of the most famous ones would have been Chateau Lynchbash, where the Lynches were from Galway. You also have Chateau Kerwin, who were also from Galway. But probably the prize chateau is Leoville Barton.
Oh,
where
yes,
the Bartons
absolutely.
We're from Strathan, where the K Club is now, that famous hotel in Dublin with the famous golf course. And Anthony Barton, who is still in charge of Leoville Barton and the other Barton chateau, often refers to himself as a bog frog. he has an Irish passport and a French passport.
Uh-huh. And
I'm going to shock you now. The first president of France was Irish, Admiral MacMahon.
Well, I didn't know about that either.
His grandfather was Patrick MacMahon, who had to leave Limerick in the 1720s. And apparently the chefs of Paris created a sauce the day he was inaugurated. It was a very hot day in Paris. And they created a sauce called mayonnaise. And to this day in Spain, they still spell mayonnaise, M-A-H-O-N.
It's absolutely amazing. I didn't realize that the Irish conquered the world quite so much, although we did have an American clan of Irishmen called Kennedy who had some influence in the more modern era. But
but
let's go back to these wine geese didn't just go to France. They also went to, you mentioned, Chateau Montalegna in California.
California, there's the Garvey family as well, who have another winery in Napa. You've got Oregon, you've got Holleran. estate which do some amazing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and he's a direct descendant from Ireland. Chile, in Chile and Argentina as well, we've got lots of Irish connections, and in Australia, some of the greatest wines in Australia have Irish connections.
Like which one?
Jim Barry, for instance. Jim Barry.
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's in South Australia, right?
Yeah. And we also have a modern wine geese, and the one that stands out at the moment is O'Dwyer, which is a wine made by Donal O'Dwyer, who left Ireland about 20 years ago. He worked in the pharmaceutical industry, and he used to come to Ashford a lot dining and loved his wine. But he worked in the pharmaceutical industry in France and in California and ended up in Australia working in the pharmaceutical industry, and about 10 years ago bought a vineyard, and he's renamed it O'Dwyer.
Oh, wonderful.
And he kept his 70-year-old Cabernet, dug up everything else, got some advice from his friends throughout the wine world, and has replanted everything except the 70-year-old vines. And he's now producing a beautiful Cabernet called O'Dwyer. He's a modern wine goose.
Yeah. Well, who knew this? This is really remarkable. And you have the opportunity not only to stock these wines in your cellar, but to recommend them to guests. I believe every day the a la carte menu has a wine pairing recommendation. And a big thing about visiting Ashford is to get involved in their wine dinners. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, the Winemaker Dinner Series started about 20 years ago with Baron Patrick de Ladouceur, who was coming here to visit. And we felt the fact that he was coming here so far that we'd have to make him work a little bit. So we created a wine dinner around his wines. And it just snowballed from there, and every year we try and have two or three winemakers' dinners where we actually bring the winemaker from wherever he or she is to Ashford. And Chef Stefan Metz creates a special 7-course degustation menu to match the wines that we're serving. And then the winemaker introduces the wines with each food pairing. And it's a very personal, we do it in the Carlton, which is a lovely, ornate, very intimate room, and it's great for these kind of dinners. We limit it to 34 people, you know, that's the maximum we can have in there, and the winemaker will discuss the wines, tell the history about the wines, and chef will prepare this amazing to-go with each dish.
Well, it's
they're wonderful events, you know.
I'm so sorry we missed it. We'll just have to come back another time make sure we coincide with one of your wine dinners when that's happening. Our largest listener base is in the United States, and two names that will ring a bell with American wine lovers, Duck Horn and Warren Winarski from Stag's Leap, have been featured in this program. And do you have any coming up from this part of the world?
Well, we're looking to do Holleran from Oregon. We're looking to do. We've done a beautiful dinner with Veronique Duhin from Oregon as well about 2 or 3 years ago. But when Warren done his dinner here, during his introduction to his wines, he said, you know, that there are three key factors to making great wine. And he said they're the three G's. And he said the guy, the grape, and the ground. And I had to butt in and I said, you know, Warren, I said, Margaret Duckhorn would disagree with you there.
she'd have a slightly different G, I guess, right?
Well, he reckoned it's okay, the girl or the guy, the ground and the grape, you know. Well, but Margaret, when Margaret done her dinner here, I stood up, and I would always thank the winemaker, and all I could say, she so impressed me, was when I stood up to thank her for dinner, the first thing I said was, now I know why someday women will take over the world. Because she's such an amazing woman. To do what she has done, herself and Dan, with their vineyard. The night before her dinner, we had some guests who actually bought wine from her out of a green hut on Highway 29 over 25 years ago.
Really?
Where Margaret would sit for maybe 10 hours a day with iced packs in the heat trying to sell her wine. And now it's a global brand, you know.
Right.
Well, we now know yet another reason why the Irish really control the world. So we thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll make a return visit. We'll meet Tyson, I hope, and I hope it won't be too long before we do that. So, Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
We look forward to having you at one of our wine dinners.
Great.
Let us know. Make sure we know.
I will, of course. We'll put you on our mailing list.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Robert.
All
goodbye.
Right. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Anne.
And we'll be back with another castle right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Up next is our bee castle, Ballinahinch. And we're going to be talking to two charming individuals, Patrick O'Flaherty. And what a great old Irish name that is.
And the funny part about it is that the castle was built on land, an estate which was controlled by the O'Flaherty clan.
Yes.
For centuries.
And then they lost it.
As Patrick was quick to point out, when they ran it, it was much larger.
Yeah. And then the chef, who's
most unusual. A most unusual gentleman, all the way from northeast China.
Yes.
To Ballinahinch Castle in Connemara, Ireland. And he didn't tell us the entire story, but the story about his cuisine is certainly fascinating as well. So again, back to back, Patrick O'Flaherty and Chef Zinn.
Yes, when we were coming here, Peter pointed out that this property and this hotel was rated number six in the whole British Isles over really luxurious properties, much more extensive properties. But we're now talking to the general manager, Patrick O'Flaherty.
How'd you do?
Oh. And he's going to explain to us how this happened.
Okay. Well, I'll try. My interpretation, I think, would probably be the best way, as I didn't actually vote myself in the Condé Nast Traveler's Reader's Choice, but it's very flattering, and I would like to say that it comes at a time of the year which is very nice as well for the team. It's been very, very busy all year, and to get that sort of recognition in the fall, that, you know, the Condé Nast Reader's Choice coming in so highly rated was a really great shot in the arm for everybody. Why did it happen? It's a very good question, and I think it reflects perhaps the aspirations of the modern traveller, what it is they're truly looking for. Anybody can buy something, but it's when you get something that you're not necessarily trying to buy that you actually end up with an experience that makes a difference to your lives. And we like to think that when people come to Connemara and to Ballinahinch Castle in particular, that they come here and they have an experience. Yes, the house, we keep it as well as we can.
But it dates to when? It's a historic house.
It's the 1750s. The property was built in the 1750s on an estate that was slightly more extensive than it is today. There was about over a quarter of a million acres.
Wow, that's
at the
huge.
Time, yes. Yeah. The Martin family were given the lands by the King of England. Having dispossessed my clan, the O'Flahertys, who ruled Connemara from the mid-1500s.
Oh, you go back that far, huh?
Yeah, we go back that far. Actually, the irony is that Ballinahinch is the English way of saying Ballinahinsa, which is Irish and means dwelling on the island. And that refers to the O'Flaherty Castle on the lake right around the corner here on the estate. So this was, in fact, the seat of the O'Flaherty clan in the 16th century.
Amazing. Now, but this is a very special situation, physically. I mean, it's wild. You don't have any parterres, see, but you have all this water. I don't even know what the bodies of water are. They're so form and omnipresent. What are they?
Yes. Well, okay. Connemara, the region of Connemara, as it's situated west of Galway City, is in fact a poorly defined region. It doesn't exist in any political sense. It doesn't exist in any topographical sense. It is a region of the west of Galway, which is comprised of mountain, bog, and lake.
Oh, that's it.
And so, bog.
I
that's a bog.
What a bog looks like.
Yeah, so all that bouncy, wet ground is bog.
Bog.
Yes.
It's good with scotch.
Yes. But of course, that's how the Irish taught the Scots how to make whiskey, but that's a completely different discussion. But Connemara, I suppose, practically all of Connemara was the Ballinahinch estate, if you will, back in the 18th century. And as a result, the house, as we like to refer to Ballinahinch Castle today, played a central role in community and place all throughout those years, and so continues to do so today. The uniqueness of the property, I think, and my team here are quite unique. I've been running the property for 15 years. This month it'll be 15 years. And my two assistants have been here combined over nearly 60 years.
You're kidding.
No, so that's kind of great.
Well, that's great. That's more than great.
Yeah, and we've got a long-standing team, and they know everybody. And we like to think that we provide a very unique and very real experience while being unpretentious at the same time.
It's not pretentious. I mean, they're just wonderful.
Well, thank you. That's what we aspire to.
They were able, when I was feeling not so good, they presented me with, at my request, ginger tea made from real ginger.
Well, yeah, we can do that. We've got a good old team in the kitchen, and that's been recognized over time as well.
And what about activities? You've got so many, going on here.
There's very little that we can't organize if we don't actually have it here on site. I mean, we have, in addition to the obvious estate which we own, which is now 450 acres, where we have our own salmon and sea trout river, flowing past the window. In fact, directly below the hotel now, later next month, we'll be able to see the salmon on the spawning beds there outside the window of the restaurant.
And you just fish them yourself?
Oh, yeah, we go fishing. But the season's closed now until the 1st of February. While the salmon fishing, and it's all fly fishing only, and we have a fishery manager, and we have 5 guides, and we have a rod room, and we have everything they might possibly need.
You have rods in the front hall.
That's right. While we have all that, and it lends a great flavor to the house, but it's not the reason why everybody comes here, because obviously it's a short enough season and there's only so many people want to actually do that. The extensive Connemara itself is one of the great big attractions. It's such a staggeringly beautiful part of the country with mountains, lakes, rivers, country roads. It's very, very beautiful. And we've got a full-time walking guides on the payroll of the hotel, and they will take people on an archaeological walk from the front door for 2 hours. Or they'll take them on a 9-hour hike.
Yeah. I saw one for 3 hours.
Yeah, there you go. Which is gentle and pleasant. And during that time, they go to see 2,500-year-old lake dwellings, 16th century tower houses, 14th century holy wells. And that's just without really leaving the grounds. On the other hand, he's also taken people on extensive 9-hour hikes over 6 of the 12 bends, which is the mountain range here. So it's any extreme that one would like to do. Then, of course, we've also got excellent hybrid bicycles, and we have got guided cycling tours around Connemara as well, which people can participate in. We can take people to the local fishing village where they can go out on a Galway hooker, which is actually a trading boat.
Yes, I learned that away.
Yes, it's important that one makes the distinction.
I get questioned about the hookers right off the bat.
Yes, that'll happen. And as much as that, it's the fact of just being here in Ballynahinch in front of one of the many log fires, reading a book, meeting the local people as well, because we're non-exclusive. We like to have our door open to whoever. Obviously, if we're going to get overrun, we have certain parts of the house are only for our resident guests, but one can go into the pub here and meet anybody from Secretary of Foreign Affairs to local sheep farmer to the chairman of one of the national banks to the U.S. ambassador. It really, and everybody standing shoulder to shoulder.
Rooney comes here?
not the current, not yet. But some of his predecessors have passed through here and happily so. And I think all these elements combined tend to create a total effect that people find massively engaging. And they feel that they're actually being treated with a certain respect as well, and not being treated like another tourist. They're being welcomed into the house by people who are proud of it and are proud of what they do. And two combined create an ambience and an atmosphere that is wholly engaging. And that's probably the experience that the readers of Condé Nast encountered. And that left them with a lasting impression, rather than the fact that there were multiple crystal chandeliers or something like this,
which
we don't.
That was another place.
which I don't know. I mean, that's just a happy coincidence. Well, that was someplace else, yeah. Which we don't do. So I think that's...
And
that's
you, really, you have a good dining program?
We have an excellent kitchen.
You're about to get an even more fabulous kitchen.
Well, yes, we're just planning out the layout. We've got a blank template now to lay out a whole new kitchen this winter when we close for a month. So it'll be a very frantic 4 weeks trying to fit out.
And when is it you close?
Close for the month of February, once the shooting season is over. Because we also have 36,000 acres of woodcock shoot, which we have shooting rights over. So through the November, December, January, we'd have shooting parties come to stay in. And that's always a nice time of the year, out with the dogs and a lot of exercise, a lot of walking, and then back to the log fires and a good game dinner.
Sounds good.
Yeah, the kitchen's good. It's local and it's seasonal.
Now, what about particulars? How does one get? Rabbi, you handle that because you're so good at that.
Well, if you don't want to drive all the way from Dublin or Cork, there is an airport just to the east of Oy.
That's correct.
There's another one to the north in County Mayo with the strange name of Knock.
That's right.
this is about an hour's drive from Galway, not a difficult drive until you get to the final turnoff where the road starts to get fairly narrow. The website is, Patrick?
It's a Ballynahinch with a Y, ballynahinch-castle.com.
And the
road signs, be prepared, are in Irish.
Ballynahinch, I guess, must be the same in Irish and English.
Yes, it's spelled the same. You do pass through certain regions on the way here that are Irish-speaking regions, or Gaeltacht, as they call it. So the signage will be in both Irish and English as you go along, okay. But it can get a little bit confusing. Hmm. Yes, we're 1 hour west of Galway City.
So it's not difficult. But it is a place where you can tour by car, and if you don't walk as well as perhaps you once upon time used to, or you have less time. So there's a tour called the Sky Road. And then there's the Connemara National Park.
Yes, indeed.
Both of which easily drivable. And I'm going to leave a little bit of a cliffhanger, because in the interest of time, we can't go over 500 years of history going back to a female pirate who was Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, I'm going to read about her.
The thing that I was most intrigued about is that at one time this property was owned by an Indian cricketer.
That's correct.
And that's not an American Indian cricketer. That's an Indian cricketer who apparently had appetites that included several Rolls Royces. So he must have been a man of some wealth.
And that's why we have a Maharaja room, right?
That's right. That was the Maharaja Ranjit Singhji, Ranji, as he was affectionately known as, the Maharaja of Jamnagar in the Gujarat province of India. And a fabulously wealthy Maharaja of his time. And he was a batsman for England. And he's the first non-white to bat for England.
He played cricket for England. He changed sides.
He would have been during the days of the Raj in India. British India, which he did not form part of. He was one of the princes. But he would have been, I suppose, a kept prince, if you will, and educated in England. And he was quite a spectacular cricketer, and is considered still by many to be one of the best that ever did bat, really? Along with grace. And today, the biggest single prize for cricket in India is the Ranji Trophy, named after Ranji, R. Ranji.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
And this February past, my wife and I attended the wedding of his grandniece, the Princess Yogini, in Rajasthan, which was pretty spectacular.
I can imagine. How many days did it take?
Well, that went on. We were there for three of the days, anyway, and that was quite enough. No, so that connection is still very much alive.
Okay.
And he owned the property right through the 20s.
Well, it's a fascinating place with layer after layer after layer of history. So much to see and do. Patrick, we're only sad that our stay is not longer than the two nights that we've been able to spend here. But we thank you so much for welcoming us to Ballynahinch Castle. Your staff has been outstanding.
Thank you.
And we're sure that's going to continue. We have some plans yet to be completed for what we're going to do tomorrow.
That's right.
But I know they're in good hands. So
I'm glad that you took the time to come here. And sometimes people are a bit dismayed when they see it's on the west coast, but it's exactly 3 hour drive from Dublin Airport, which makes a big difference. And then you enter what has been called by Michael Cody, the poet, Connemara, a state of light.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's great. Well, you're a poet, as all Irishmen are at heart.
Well, we try.
Thanks, Patrick.
You're very welcome, and pleasure. Thanks very much, Peter.
Well, this is going to be a really interesting story. We're going to be talking to the executive chef, the head chef here, of the place where we're staying, which is the Ballynahinch Castle. But it's sort of not what you'd expect. His name is... Well, Peter told me his name was Zeng, and I figured he'd have a pretty perky personality. But it's actually Xin Sun. And is that almost close to the pronunciation?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's very good.
And you must have a story behind how somebody from the north of China, is it northeast or northwest?
Northeast China, Dalian, called Dalian.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's the place I'm from. It's close to the harbor, which is a similar location to Galway.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you probably already had a way with seafood, right?
Of course, yeah. We've been always in a food place. Majority of the seafood export come from the place I'm from, like the prawn crackers is unique to us. It's actually anywhere in the world, the prawn crackers you can get is all from the place I'm from, Dalian. That's unique to us, which is our specialty.
Now, your wife, Irish, this area, Connemara, and particularly from, what's the city?
Clifton, which is 7 miles from the hotel.
And then you live there with your three sons.
Three boys.
And all little. You must have your hands full.
Yeah, I do. That's a part-time job after the hotel.
I think it's more than a part-time job. But now, where did you meet your wife?
Well, I started here as junior sous chef in 2005, and I met my wife in the local pub, obviously in the friend's party, and then we started go out together, and then we just got married.
Well, how did you end up here just to start with?
I was just a recommendation by some of friends that said that the job was going on here, and it was quite good places to work with, and so I took my chance.
Now, where were you at the time?
I was in the Connemara Coast Hotel in Galway City, and I just needed to take some new challenge and prove my skills and learn something different. The opportunity came out in the Ballyhinch, which is the required for the junior sous chef, so I took a step forward and I took the job. It worked all well in the first year, and then I got a career come up in as a head chef in Mayo, which is another county in County Mayo. And so I took that job, and then my first son arrived, and the weddings, all that kind of thing. It was quite a long commute to Mayo from Clifton, and there's another chance came out from Ballyhinch, which required a head chef. I took the position, and I came back since 2007 until now, so it's 5 years.
Hold on a second, there's a step you missed out here, which is called how you got to Galway in the first place.
Okay, I was first in Dublin first in back 2000. That was when I did my scholarship from China.
Do you cook in China?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I took a scholarship. And
so you would have cooked Chinese food?
Yeah, well, no, I specialized in the Western food.
You mean you could do that?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that?
I don't know. It just appeared that the different kind of a plating presentation of the arts that's interest for me, and also though it was an opportunity thinking of there's too many people doing Chinese food, which not many doing the Westerns, but if I took the Western ways, there's not many competition around, so which it could be easier for me to get a job.
Don't you prefer to eat Chinese food?
Well, I can always eating Chinese food regardless of whether I go to college or not. So I might take a bonus of learning Western food.
Okay, so you got a scholarship,
yeah.
You came to Dublin, and then the rest is history.
Yeah.
Now, was it difficult adjusting your palate to a Western taste?
Our family are very open-minded. We tried all sorts of things. You know, we started from fast food, McDonald's, you know, all that kind of, and KFC's kind of things, and then move to
that's
the...
That's terrible, yeah.
Yeah,
but that's all over China.
The palace, you know, that kind of things. I mean, we can get all that kind of cream and butter kind of things, bread, you know.
But what did your mother cook at home?
She's cooking traditional Chinese foods.
And your region of China, what is the traditional food?
So it'll be kind of mix of Eastern Europeans.
Really?
Yeah, because we were close to Russia, and during the wartime, I think in certain generations, we were mixed together.
Oh,
yeah? Kind of things, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so we eating sauerkraut. I eating sauerkraut since I was a kid, and we've been making sauerkraut since I was a kid. Same as the Eastern European does, how they live. They eating the, they kill the pig, they stew them with the sauerkraut.
And who does?
The Czech Republic, Russia, the Eastern Europeans.
Well, actually, Italians from the area of Friuli, they do sauerkraut too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're pretty well settled in here, and you mastered the techniques, and then you familiarized yourself with the local products.
Yes.
Were you pleased to find so many good products?
Yes, I found, especially in Connemara, that we're lucky enough we have a loads of seafood sources. And say in the summer we have our own salmon that the people staying here, they're fishing the salmon, and they all often ask the kitchen to prepare the dinner for them with their own salmon.
Really?
And in the winter also we have a shooting, we can get a woodcock, kind of things, a pheasant, and not too far away we can source our venison. manner, things like that. So yeah, we using what we can get surrounded. Also, there's a fresh seafood market in Galway, in Galway City or in Dublin. Sometimes, you know, it's not too far away from us.
No.
And we have a good reputation for Connemara lamb, which is probably the best lamb you can get in Ireland.
It's good.
Yeah, and I think there's a, it used to be Connemara Hill lamb being exported, you know, had own brand kind of things going on. And our butcher is a master butcher from Ireland, and he studied and trained in Germany.
Your accent on Ireland sounds just like the Irish from Galway.
Yeah, well, you too, that.
Say, you know, those four-legged creatures that have manes and tails and they race. They're called?
Horse.
How do you say it?
Horse.
Horse. If you're really Irish, you say horse. Anyhow, I'm looking at your menu for today, and I, of course, I know what I'm going to have right off the bat, which is the oysters with shallot, vinaigrette, and lemon. You also have this tuna. Why is the tuna so good here?
Oh, you see, the Japanese always getting their tuna in the around the sea for their sushi to bring them back. It's kind of like a Virgin Island to getting the tuna in here because not many people using tuna before. So all the tuna is kind of, you know, a lot of good quantity sourcing.
But the Japanese cheat. They overfish and they fish.
Yeah, so they, and then selling back to us.
Yeah, well.
Yes, they.
Incredible, huh?
Yeah.
See, salmon, soto, and duck. Ducks are plentiful here too.
Yeah.
What's your favorite main course here? Because you have fillet of beef. What else?
Well, the beef is always most very popular for any occasion for most people. But like if I was going out, I'd rather have something that different rather than beef, because you can get a beef anywhere else. Where on this menu, there's some game going on there.
That's a mallard, you have.
Yeah. You see, you know, it's different type dog. It's a wild dog. It's got intensive flavor and taste into it, and their own texture. And I just do believe if I'm gonna spend money and I go out for a dinner for occasion, I want to try something different. Can do at home.
How's your rabbit?
Rabbit's good too, but it's
not wild.
It's not the wild. It's a farm, but then again, you know, it's not something you can get it just off the supermarket either.
So so what's your pick on that? You also have cod. What's your pick for main course?
I would say try the mallard.
Okay, very good. And desserts too?
Yeah, we do the dessert as well. Yeah, we have our own pastry chef baking all the breads.
Okay. You have that gorgeous soda bread.
Yeah, biscuits, all that kind of things.
Okay. Tell me this, then, on your own, and don't tell me McDonald's. If you have a craving for a special food, your comfort food, what is it when you're not working?
Kind of a one-pot cooking, a stew.
Uh-huh, but
just go plain Irish way of the stew now. I feel more, you want some more flavor going in there, you know, more exhaust, you know, taste into it, you know, just bring my palate jumping. And to sit back on with an open fire and relax, without have too much trouble going to clean all the dishes like we would do in the hotel,
right,
with the pots, pans here. And so one pot cooking, yeah, that's definitely something.
Well, we're looking forward. I'm glad to meet you, because I mean, it just seems like Ireland has become much more experimental than it used to be.
Mm.
And much more mixed up of cultures than it used to be. So I'm really pleased. I look forward to dinner tonight.
Yes. You will have a great time, I hope.
Any other message for our listeners?
Yeah, don't be afraid of trying something different. Don't be put out by what the chef tell you what's better to eat. Give yourself a try. You never lose anything. You only have one opportunity, probably. Let's give it a go.
Good.
And don't go away, because you're going to want to hear about a little about Drumoland, and it's a teaser, a little known fact about the Drumoland Castle, which I promise we'll bring you right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. If you're sitting on the edge of your chair, I am too, because I don't know what little secret Peter has in mind.
You don't remember our conversation with Simon Hodgson, who told us there was an interesting connection between Dromola and Castle and the Steeler Nation, the worldwide Steeler Nation, because the U.S. ambassador to Ireland and the majority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Dan Rooney, is one of the investors who owns Dromola and Castle. And we didn't mention that to Chef David McCann when we talked to him, but we thought it's something that you really ought to know, because inquiring minds need to know that kind of thing. And of course, that's the kind of thing that On Your Menu likes to find out.
And David gave such a wonderful interview.
So why don't we just
let him talk?
Right. Funny thing happened when On the Menu was our route from the southwest of Ireland in County Cork to the west of Ireland in Galway. We were driving along the road and we were starting to get a little hungry, and we saw a sign. Now, Peter's pretty clever because he'd actually seen the sign on the going in the opposite direction. And everyone told us that Dromola and Castle was a place that we really ought to go if we had time. So we decided, well, we'll just pull in and we'll see what it looks like. And parked close to reception, and there was a very nicely dressed gentleman climbing the stairs into the reception hall. So I said, hello. And I introduced myself, and I said, we're just dropping by Dromola. So Simon Hodgson, I think, who's the assistant general manager, said, come on in and have some lunch. So we did. And that's how we got connected with Chef David McCann, who I guess was supervising what was happening to us that day, but we didn't have the opportunity to meet him. So, David, welcome to On the Menu. We're delighted that we were able to catch up with you today.
And I'm delighted to speak to you today also.
And this is the most sensationally elegant property, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'll never forget the first day when I came in the gates and the Long Avenue, which is about a kilometer long. There's a little S-bend at the middle, and just before you approach it, you can see very distinctive castle turret. And each day I've been here quite a long time, since 1995, 17 years, almost 18 years, and it still gets me every time I drive in the drive.
And everything's also very green.
Well, that's Ireland for you. That's not necessarily Dromola.
Now, tell us something about the dining program that you've headed for now almost 18 years.
Well, to be honest, when I first came here, it was probably just coming out of recession in Ireland in 1995. Maybe a few shoots of what became known as the Celtic Tiger were beginning to emerge, but the castle was in quite a lot of disrepair. I had been in London for 10 years. I had taken a job, because there were very few jobs available at the time, I'd taken a job in actually where you'd come from, in County Cork, and I was approached through a very good friend of mine. I was only about 2 months in that job, and I had to go up and visit Mark Nolan, the then GM at Dromola, and have a chat with him. And I was quite inspired by what he said to me and what his plans were for the future. So things have changed a hell of a lot in 17 years.
So he set off, and they had plans about to be put in motion for really re-elevating this magnificent property.
No, absolutely, and restore it to some of its splendor. The castle itself was a domestic residence to Lord Inchiquin up until the mid-60s, and it was turned into a hotel by Bernard McDonough, who had an American with Irish connections. So he was turned into the castle, but it just needed that to bring it into the modern era. And while the chef that was here, he was a French Anglo chef, Jean-Baptiste Molinari, he'd been here for about 7 or 8 years. He'd gained the Michelin star at the time. So there was, from a kitchen point of view, there was definitely something good going on. In fact, it was for a young 28-year-old guy coming from London, it was quite daunting taking the reins from a chef like that. But it went smooth enough. Enjoyed the first couple of years very much indeed.
Now, modern Irish cuisine, though, which we've enjoyed a great deal on this trip that we just made and on a trip the year before, that hadn't really started to emerge yet, had it, by the time when you were there, when you first went there?
No, not in a sense as you speak. In fact, obviously I spent my formative years in Ireland at catering college and then on to the Shelburne Hotel and then to quite a modern restaurant at the time, which was White's on the Green, just off Stephen's Green in Dublin, for any of your listeners. And then I decided I needed to get some international experience. There wasn't much happening in Ireland, and off I went to London. Now, the first place I went to was called the Mirabelle Restaurant in Curzon Street. Very classical restaurant, but again, Michelin starred, etc. From there, my head chef looked at my CV and he said, you need to get some grounding, and the best place to go to was the Connaught Hotel in Carlos Place in Mayfair, under the stewardship of Michel Bourdin. And it was very classical French and British style cooking. And I think I spent 7 years there, and I'd say 3 years into it, a chef by the name of Marco Pierre White emerged in the restaurant scene.
Food
from that time, it really exploded thereafter in London. And then I think it spread its influences to Ireland and beyond.
Now, there were some ladies down at a cooking school called Ballymallow who had a little bit to do with it too, I guess.
Well, yeah, but their roots would be similar to mine, getting a good foundation in classical cookery, and absolutely, Ballymallow Cookery School is like world-renowned, but it is classic cooking. You can go on and do your modern-style cooking when you have those basics.
Right.
Well, do you combine the classical, your classical background and experience, with more innovative approaches? What were some of the things that influenced you in that direction?
Well, I suppose it was a few people that I met along the way, sort of that had worked at the Connaught or worked with people had gone through the Connaught, and said, "Get your foundation right." I suppose it's like educating in any field. Get your foundation right, and you can go wherever you wish. Now, I think spending 7.5 years, maybe with hindsight, maybe that was a little bit too long, or maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But I think once you leave that cauldron, I mean, you can begin to express yourself, then you realize the foundation you have, where you can adapt different influences from cooking styles. And I think we've certainly done that, but we've kept our traditional flavor, which suits, as you've seen, it suits a castle atmosphere like here.
Oh, it's such a gorgeous... Now, there's more than one dining venue. What do you have?
Well, our main showcase is the Earl of Thomond. It's an absolute... I think it's one of the prettiest castle restaurant styles in Ireland and beyond. It's got three beautiful Waterford crystal chandeliers and lovely wall fabric. Now, of course, that's the fixtures and fittings, but what goes on the plate, it's a very classical style service, black tie waiters and waitresses, and the food, even though it wouldn't have a classical service of what I learned in the Connaught, all the Garrydon service, all that's a thing of the past. It's modern influences, everything is plated, but it would say we'll come in domes, silver cloches, a lot of silver, crystal, etc. Now, that's our main showpiece, but of course, when you're a hotel service, a lot of people travel and touring in the afternoon, so there would be no lunch trade as such, so we do snack food in the bar and in the gallery area of the castle, which would be common rooms, and then straight into the traditional afternoon tea, which would be for a special treat for people passing or people resident in the hotel.
Now, I had fish and chips for lunch, which was really quite an extraordinarily fine representation of one of my favorite dishes, one of my favorite high-tail dining dishes. But we didn't have a chance to stay for dinner, but if we were dining tonight in the Earl of Thomond room, what would you be recommending that we try?
Well, we've just kicked off our game season, so our first batch of pheasants and the partridge are in, and so I'd be telling people to have that.
Oh, that's great.
We've had them hanging in the feather for 3 days, and then they would have been processed, so they have a nice gamey flavor. They're not too chickeny.
Uh-huh. That sounds great.
Now, do you raise those?
I want to come for dinner, chef.
To be honest, all our game is managed. Venison deer would be running wild, and the only venison we would be able to buy is the stuff that is culled during the season. So that's managed. The poultry would be wild duck, pheasant, and partridge, and they would be bred in the vicinity of Newmarket and Fergus, and then released at different stages throughout the year. Semi-wild.
Okay.
Do you know anything about grouse?
Grouse. There used to be grouse in this county, in this part of Ireland. The highest point of our county is called Mount Callan, and they used to have grouse. Huh. They're endangered species. There's very few of them in Ireland. And right. The main grouse that we would get, you have to import from Scotland.
Uh-huh. And we just interviewed somebody about grouse in a restaurant in Iceland. And they said that the main taste of the bird comes from some kind of berry that lodges in their gullet.
There you go.
So I said,
I have to say, like, in my time in London in the Connaught Hotel, the game season was very traditional, and there was a famous butcher's called Allen's of Carlos Place, and you could see the game hanging outside their old traditional shop. It was a beautiful shop. But grouse was one of my favorite wild meats.
Oh,
a
wow.
Lovely deep red color.
Allen's is still there.
That's correct, it's still there.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Still there. I used to, we stayed several times at the Grosvenor House, and one of my morning walks along the street took me to Grosvenor, to Berkeley Square, right past this wonderful looking butcher shop.
That's it, Jeff.
Now, seafood is big in Ireland, and you have access to some great seafood, so
we had a hard time.
Would you be pointing us in that direction?
Yeah, actually, all those years ago when I first came here, all the seafood was coming from the south of Ireland, from the Kerry Cork area, but yet it's only 40 kilometres to the west coast, Galway Bay, Doolin. And I remember getting in touch with a local fish supplier, and he would have been a small fish supplier, and I said, would you be interested in supplying the castle? And he said, I don't know. He said, it's quite a distance.
Well, you know, when we were in Dublin, we had really wonderful access to lobsters and oysters, and they all came from the west. Now, here we were this year in the west, and we couldn't get any oysters or lobster.
Well, you had them once.
Once. That's all. The whole time we were there.
Yeah, I think it may have been that the people... The weather was too inclement for the fishermen to go out. I'm really not sure. They just were not landing oysters and lobsters as Anne would have wished.
Yes.
What time of the year were you in Ireland?
This was like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, well, the weather was definitely inclement, and you'd certainly go by the seasons. Most unusual, because obviously the oysters are farmed, even though you have two different types of oysters, but the main oyster, the Galway Bay native oyster, yeah, it should be readily available. As for lobster, you got to speak to Mr. Garrahy of Mr. Garrahy's Seafoods, and he'd have no problem getting your lobster. I actually have them arriving in about a half an hour.
Oh, wow. Okay. David, I'm coming for dinner.
so we just hit a lull. We were there very much at the end of the summer. I guess the places we stayed, Park Na Silla, they were actually closing their resort for the season.
Yeah, they were winding down for the winter.
So they were winding down, so maybe that's what was going on.
Now, David, tell me this. If you were to mention, if you wanted people to know what your strong point is, and culinary strong point, what would you cite? What kind of food?
In an Irish sense, or definitely looking from a Dromoland and location of where we are, all I would do is talk about produce. Now, I've been here a long time, and obviously I've built up and helped people start businesses locally supplying. So I just look at the quality of our produce, and I think you taste the difference, you know? I certainly don't want to insult people, but, like, say our beef and our lamb, etc., all our grazing animals... You just have to look at our climate. You've just mentioned it earlier about how green the countryside is. That goes in one end, and it comes out in the quality of the actual product. I've tasted meat everywhere, including the United States. You get a lot of grain-fed beef, and I just think there is no comparison. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, a lot of pockets of grass-fed are being stimulated now in this country. For years, you didn't have much of a choice. You're right. Mm.
One thing which I like, of course we have an international audience and you do have to adhere to international tastes, etc., but if I write the menu each day and I come in early in the morning and you get in touch with your fish supplier or whatever and you'll say what's on the market and that's what you base it on. If you go to, when you're in city centres, the produce comes to you and it's a day old or whatever, it's not quite at the same quality as I would get here. I feel.
Okay, so people will just drop it right off, pick that day, or land it the night before?
No, absolutely. Like, if you came looking for John Dory, which is one of my favorite fish, and it wasn't available that day, it won't be on the menu. End of story. I'm not going to buy frozen. I'm not going to import it. If it's not here, unfortunately, you don't get it. But what you do get is what's on the market and super fresh.
Well, we're delighted that we've had the opportunity to chat with you, and we'll take a rain check on dinner with you next time.
I'm not allowed to go.
Next time we're in your vicinity, and we wish you well, and please say hello to our friend Simon, who was the starting point that made all this happen.
I'll be with him on the steps the next time you come to welcome you.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
David, thank you so much.
No. Lovely talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
And we won't be back in Ireland next week. We'll be back in Ireland again sometime, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you may be sure that we'll have another fascinating program for you next week. Same time, same place. So we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.